Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Writer's Block with me, Morgan O'Reilly, right here on 90.3 Near FM. Coming up in the next hour, we've got all the usual music, discussion, and of course, all things literary, so stick around. Why pamper life's complexities when the leather runs smooth on the passenger seat. Indeed, why indeed, Morrissey, why indeed. Well, great show coming up today, folks. We've got the gentleman behind Cave Writings. It's a new open mic night in Dublin. And coming up after 4 o'clock, we've got our usual visiting writer slot. And today we have Italian poet Tiziana Soverino. But first, a bit of music. This one is from the band. It's from The Last Waltz. And it is, of course, Van the Man. Van the Man there, it doesn't get much better than that. But anyway, so Cave Writings is an open mic event that has recently started in Dublin, and we're about to find out all about it. We've got the three men behind the event. Lads, you're very welcome to the show.
How's it going, Morgan?
How's it going?
Hi, Morgan, how are you?
We have Andrew Kavanagh, Fionn Rogan, and Dylan Joyce Ahern. So Dylan, if I can start with you, and I'll try and address you all by name so we avoid the confusion of you all fighting to give me an answer. So can you just briefly tell us, what is Cave Writings? What's it all about?
Well, Cave Writings is a space. We don't actually have one location. We're like a space that facilitates a creative discourse, I suppose, in Dublin, and encourages like cross-fertilization between different
creative disciplines.
Creative disciplines.
Mostly writing. I mean, like, the way we put it, when we started off, it was kind of literary kind of work, such as poetry, drama, fiction, etc. Mm. That was kind of our bread and butter.
But we've since branched out into, like I say, scientific papers or critical theory. So anything most people are passionate about, they can read and present to the general creative community. Mm. We don't like have featured writers. We just encourage people to turn up, share their work, talk about it, have a few drinks, and just really encourage people to meet and talk and try and have a look at how people are reacting to the different stimuli of modern Ireland in the different disciplines.
It was kind of, when we started at first, it was kind of about creating a real space where people can actually meet. What we found, like, Dublin is this incredibly exciting city to write in, and it's an incredibly exciting city in terms of what people are creating. But a lot of it was based in journals or online, or there wasn't kind of a set space for everyone to just meet up and kind of talk to one another.
In real life.
Exactly. So we added a much needed dose of reality to the creative scene.
Okay. Lots of really excellent stuff there that I'd like to pull you up on. You mentioned that you don't have a venue as such, so to speak. Am I right?
We started originally in the Wine Cave in Casey Beaches, where Fiona was working, and that's how we kind of got the name. We came up with it on the night. And then we became nomadic, and we've done events in the Ink Factory, we've done them in the Phoenix Park, we've done them in our gas. We've done them in the Squat Barricade Inn on Parnell Street, we've done them in the Lilliput Press, and then we're back to the Barricade Inn next Monday.
Tell us, how many events have you had
in the future
to date?
What was that, Morgan? Sorry?
How many events have you had to date?
We're trying to do this. Basically, we started off as a weekly event. And the problem with being a weekly event is you don't give writers enough time to write.
Okay.
So we then moved down to bi-weekly, and then for a short period we're every month. But we're back to weekly now.
Weekly-ish.
We've had about 20 events so far.
Yeah, we're sporadic.
20, excellent.
We're 6 months old there on the 27th.
Okay, so 20
happy
birthday.
6 months is actually not that bad.
Mm. Yeah, and another point that I'd like to ask you about, just in your introduction there, you used the word space. It must have been 5 or 6 times, I lost count, but it's really interesting, I suppose, in that you're determined to refrain from keeping it. I get the sense that you don't want it to become stale or sterile or something. Can that happen if writing only is what you see on the page, I suppose?
Well, as much as we're experimenting with content, we're experimenting with the space and how people react to it and engage with it.
Engage with
it,
yeah. That's the interesting thing about the barricade is that they're occupying the building. So they really are doing something very different with how we accept place and space and property. And it seems like an ideal place to do... Ideal space, I'm contradicting myself. to do, a creative event where people engage with words or, you know, some people are spoken words, some people write for the page. But I suppose by not locking ourselves to a place or indeed to a time, the fact that we are not as regular, you know, it's not weekly or bi-weekly, means that we're keeping it as fresh and as organic as possible, I suppose.
Also, I mean, not to use a bullshit term like safe space, but one thing that we've kind of taken away from other kind of, there's a massive number of events going on around Dublin.
Yeah.
But what our one was, we didn't dictate our events by team. We didn't. Yeah. We don't have featured writers. So when we started out, I mean, a lot of us had never read ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, and we have that a lot with a lot of our readers. And they'll come in and they'll say, we'll ask them if they want to read. And they'll say, no, I'm sorry, I'll be too nervous. Then usually by the end of the night, they'd want to read, which was a really interesting thing for us to develop.
Yeah, because they see how open and responsive the audience generally is.
Yeah, we're just a sound bunch, like, we do try.
One thing there you mentioned, and I actually saw it on your Twitter account as well, you claim to be an event that purports to support cross-contamination of all art, all ideas, and then you said that perhaps that this is one of the key attributes that marks you out as different from the rest of the herd. Can I ask you to tell me a little bit more about that?
Our very first event back in January, we started off with a poem by a lad we used to live with, and it was about the devil fucking God. Then we moved on to a physics paper, and then we moved on to a zoology piece.
Yeah, it was very eclectic. You know, it really did kind of start... that was the first thing that a gym read. The first thing it was ever read in the cave.
It was quite shocking,
and then it moved into just... I mean, equally shocking in the sense that, you know, you have people come and read physics papers and stuff that, you know, as art students, you never have heard of. And it just kind of blows your mind in a different way than some of the poetry, the short fiction. So those are, say, disciplines that are, they also, you know, deal in writing. But then we have a lot of artists who come, filmmakers. We have a project in the pipeline called Cave Paintings, whereby we've linked up 10 writers from the cave and 10 artists, visual artists. And we've paired them up. And they're responding to each other's work. So the writer is going to respond to a piece of work by the artist and vice versa. And they're going to exhibit the works sometime in September. So we're on the lookout for a new space to do that. But just something different that we've never done before is present visual arts. We've had artists speak, but to actually hang things in a temporary space, you know, it's just an interesting development for us.
It keeps us interesting for us because it's a new kind of world we haven't interacted with.
So you're actually going to... Sorry to cut across there. You're actually looking at...
Because we don't have any exposure to it. You guys are writers, but we're not visual artists, so we're kind of relying on the expertise of these NCAD graduates that we particularly work with.
And you're actually... I mean, you mentioned September there. You actually have a date or events in mind that you're going to produce things, actually?
So we've paired the artists and the writers up, but a lot of people are away for the summer, so we just wanted to give them enough time to dwell on the piece they're going to be responding to figure out how they're going to articulate a response, because we set no limits on, you know, what medium they're going to respond in, how their response is going to be articulated by the writers even, so we wanted to give them as much time as possible. Mm-hmm. So we haven't set a date yet, but it'll be sometime end of September. Mm. We've literally given them each other's email and told them to work away without giving them guidelines or our own opinions on what they should do.
And, I mean, it's a really fascinating point, this idea that art, various forms of art and science, as you said, in dialogue with each other. I mean, do the three of you guys write? Have you been inspired to go down an avenue that you wouldn't have explored previously?
That's actually one really cool thing that's happened, because there's so many different styles of writing that came to the cave. We're starting to know this amongst ourselves, and then we kind of have a small sort of, I suppose, canon of writers that come every single time. We're starting to recognise writing that's been influenced by other styles. There's one poet who's a sound poet, and I know for myself, if I write prose, I'm starting to kind of take ideas from his poetry, and even just the way he uses language. And it's just very, very cool to see how they develop. We take from one another and we give to one another.
It's also cool that it's encouraged people to share their work outside of cave events. Mm.
Yeah.
So I know there's people who now
might, you know, have a piece finished and I send it on to a writer that they've met through the cave and say, oh, give me some feedback on this. Or, you know, when meeting new writers and seeing different styles, you know, it can organically rub off on you, but you can also say, oh, they have an interesting line of thought that I would like them to edit my work, do you know?
Yeah.
It can happen both organically, but as well, there's a certain amount of networking that was facilitated. You know, and that's not a dirty word, I don't think.
No, it isn't a dirty word. It's grammar. It's all part of life.
That idea of feedback, is there opportunity for feedback for, I mean, can we go as far to say criticism, I suppose, in the cave?
I think what happens is we usually have about 40-50 minutes of readings and then we spend the night together drinking afterwards. And that usually, it kind of, you have a room full of writers and creative types. They're going to be talking, and they're going to be talking most likely about their work or about whatever they're doing. So usually it happens organically. We don't actually facilitate.
We never say sit down and talk about your poetry.
Yeah.
We want the people to do that. Yeah, with their own volition.
Mm. I think that's one thing. We've always had the caves. Since we've left Casey Beaches and kind of moved on the road, they've always been BYOB. And they're starting to last longer and longer.
Yeah,
in
the morning.
It's
great because there's nowhere to get kicked out of.
Yeah, that's it. No, and it just means that you have a group of creative types, and if they're there at 4 in the morning, they've been out all night. It also just breaks down barriers. People will start talking more openly about their own work, or what they thought of other people's work. Mm-hmm. Because if it's just a matter of read the poem, sit down, if you don't know people well enough, or if you feel that it's a... you know, a non-social setting, then you might not say, well, listen, I like this, but I really thought that bit was crap, or I didn't like that at all, and I would rather tell you than plumasia and just say, oh, that was all great.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I think
yeah,
that
yeah.
the barriers come down around 4 in the morning.
Yeah, no, there's a genuine community there. They respect each other, right?
So, and I suppose then my next question is, what part of the cave do you think is more important, the initial readings or this massive... booze up, I suppose, afterwards, where people can discuss their work.
Not that it's a massive booze up. They play into one another.
Yeah.
But to say they're separate is wrong, is they're not.
True.
You know, they're absolutely organic. And it's, as well, an important thing is that if you have to go up on stage, I don't mean stage, you know, to the focal point of the room and just read, it's very, very intimidating. I mean, myself and Fiona had never read before the cave. But if it's a setting where it's more like a group of friends having a few drinks, and you don't feel the audience performer
separation
dichotomy, then it's much, much easier. And it really does have a lot of people really who would never read before.
It's about creating a very casual space.
Comfortable
it's
space.
It's like going to a friend's house and literally, not to read out a few poems. Mm. It's one feature that we really like, is the fact we don't have featured writers. Mm. It is literally just people coming along.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, that's one thing we say, open mic, I think readings is the word we use more often.
Yeah,
it's not some people do come and perform as such.
Mm, yeah.
Some people come specifically with the intention of getting feedback. For other people, it's just to be in an environment where there's a lot of creative people who, they they're working on their own stuff. They might not necessarily read, but they're there. It really is about getting people together in real life, you know, and forming relationships, friendships, even if they're professional in inverted commas, or just, you know, creative relationships. It really was about
real-life, real-time band of people that we like to hang out with.
Yeah.
Which helps.
That kind of humanising aspect, you've mentioned that a few times now in the interview, and you've said that you want cave writings to be a point of contact, a real-life sphere where writers can talk about their work as opposed to journals or trying to apply to periodicals or meeting agents and all that kind of thing. That's very important, is it?
Yeah, it's not a focal point of the game. I suppose, we do have there are several editors of different magazines who come along, but mostly they're coming along as writers. So we're not
like talent scouting.
No,
we're not doing that.
It's literally a bunch of writers getting together and reading their stuff. We don't say... Do you see that guy over there? He does this. Go talk to him. He'll publish your stuff. It's not that we're not about that. It's just it doesn't really interest us.
It does raise awareness, though. I mean, if you're a young writer, say the last event we had, the Virgin Monologues, with 8 completely unpublished writers. And unpublished for different reasons. Some were spoken word. They had never really engaged with print. Some were just very young. Mm-hmm. Some just had never been accepted. In one sense then, if you're more involved in the writing community, you obviously will know more about different journals, if you are seeking publication. So I guess it's just about letting people know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know? Mm.
I do like the word humanized that you use, though. We might steal that and put it on and use it for advertising purposes.
No worries, lad.
Yeah, I like that.
You
one.
Can take that, yeah. Would it be fair, you're a student-driven enterprise, both in the organisation and the attendees, am I right, wrong?
Oh, no, that's one thing we were afraid of when we started out.
It did start out that way, though, because that was purely by the
who we knew.
That we moved in.
It's
explore, you know, it's evolved from that, I think.
Yeah.
To not separate them by age or...
Like, two of us are from Trinity, one's from DCU, so, originally we were in Casey Peaches, right beside Trinity, so we're... Not that we were afraid it would become a Trinity event, but we didn't want to limit ourselves. So we went out to different colleges and we talked to them. We talked to their different literary groups. And then we went out to different events where people weren't necessarily students. And we've been really happy that we have like a complete cross-section of community. And we've maintained that as well, which is important.
I mean, and even for the cave paintings project, there's a lot of mature students who were respected for that. You know, it's not as if we explicitly want young people or a certain type of writer or anything like that. It really is just there's so much going on, try and get as many of them in the one place as possible.
And are you recording the nights, or is there anything going to be published in the near future, or have you explored that yet?
So we do have a SoundCloud where we have like recordings of the different readings put up in like podcast format, and a lot of stuff on our YouTube for videos as well, but it's mainly supplemental. As like a nostalgic kind of being able to look back over it as a writer, as a reader, and as an audience member to relive that moment as well. But we do want them to engage physically with it, because you don't get the likes of the introductions or the discussion afterwards that you would if you were there on the night. So we do have those, but they're mainly used as like supplemental to the live performance.
Because once again, the cave is a real space.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we want people to take away from it.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any plans immediately to publish like a journal or a writing.
There's so much people, so many amazing journals in Dublin, but online in print, in Ireland, and there's so many talented writers. And what we were basically doing is filling a space that should have probably been filled before we got here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, just offering a hub for people to come and talk. And I mean,
because a lot of our writers would have been published in these great journals that we would have read them in before, so we didn't want to replicate that. We wanted to try and do something new, different, and interesting.
Lads, we're just about running out of time now, but it sounds like a fantastic event. Where can people go to get more information about cave writings?
Twitter and Facebook. So our Twitter handle is @cave_writings. And then on Facebook,
just search for Cave Writings. It's where we put up mainly our events and our say videos and photos. But Twitter would be the most up-to-date information. We also have a back catalogue of some of our performances on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/cavewritings, all one word, and also on YouTube as well. But mainly, Facebook and Twitter would be where we put up our info.
And then next event is on Monday in the Barricade Inn at 7.
So this Monday.
That's going to be really nice. They're after doing up their ballroom, which is gorgeous.
That they're letting us use, so you'll be able to see what we do then if you want to join us.
Yeah. Lovely, lovely.
I suppose that's the most important bit. That's where we'll be in real life next.
Monday, 7.
In the flesh. Yeah.
Well, lads, you said that regardless of what people are reading, what's most important is that they're passionate, and you guys certainly sound very passionate about the event, so thanks very much for coming on to the show. It's really been a pleasure having you.
Cheers, Morgan.
Thanks very much. All the best, lads. Good luck.
Bye.
That was Dylan, Joyce Ahern, Fionn Rogan and Andrew Kavanagh from Cave Writings. Sounds like a wonderful event. Next event is on Monday night in the Barricade Inn. Well, we are going to take another piece of music. This one is With a Mind to our visiting poet, coming in after 4 o'clock, Tiziana Soverino. She is, of course, Italian. And this one is from the master himself, Bob Dylan, and it is Tangled Up in Blue. Enjoy.
Early one morning, the sun was shining. I was laying in bed, wondering if she...
Your 24-hour community station.
867 1190.
Near FM.
And you're very welcome back to Writer's Block with me, Morgan O'Reilly, right here on 90.3 Near FM. Today we welcome Tiziana Soverino into the studio to talk to us about her poetry. Tiziana, you're very welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
No, thank you for coming in. Well, Tiziana, we will, as always, get the awkward stuff out of the way to begin with, so you can briefly introduce yourself to our listeners.
Fair enough. Hi everyone, my name is Tiziana Severino and I'm from Italy originally, but I've been living in Dublin since 2004. I came here to do a degree in Celtic studies, and this was back in 2004, but because I liked it so much, I decided to go on and I did a PhD in early Irish and Irish folklore. I also write mostly poetry. I'm also into social justice.
I suppose I'll have to ask for our listeners, I mean, as an Italian, what drew you to Ireland to study Celtic history?
Yeah, that's something that people always ask me. It's difficult to remember exactly when I became interested in Irish culture, but I know it must have been when I was about maybe 13, 14 years of age. I just started to be interested in Irish and Celtic culture. Maybe it was Irish traditional music, I'm not sure, but I know I remember reading many Irish stories and books about Ireland by Irish writers. And I just became more and more interested. And actually, there are a number of people interested in Irish culture in Italy.
Okay.
So it was more of a pastime at the beginning, but then I became more and more interested in it. And I guess when I had to decide what to do after secondary school, I knew I wanted to do Celtic studies, and I couldn't really do them in Italy, so I decided to move here.
And was, I mean, you're talking about Irish culture and Irish literature, was the attraction of Ireland's fame as somewhere where there's a lot of famous writers and so on, was that something that played a part as well?
I think so, yes, because Oscar Wilde is one of my favourite authors, and Yeats as well.
And Tiziana, what age were you when you began writing poetry? I mean, did you have an influential parent or teacher or friend? I mean, why did you start writing poetry?
I think I was very young. I was probably six. I was always a bit of a bookworm anyway, so it would have been natural to me. I'm not sure. I mean, as opposed to writing poetry, I perhaps composed poems before. I think perhaps poems predate writing. In that, not only in history, but perhaps in my life. In that, you know, you can compose a poem as a child, and even if you don't know how to write.
Yeah, but a funny word that rhymes with
yeah. But certainly, when I was six, anyway, I started writing poetry. And actually, both my dad and my sister used to write poetry in the past, so they supported me. But also, I had a very good Italian teacher, and she also helped.
Okay, excellent. We first got in contact with each other after a colleague of mine, Iñaki Irigoyen, put us in touch, and he had just missed out on his wonderful series, Poetic Lives, which people can still listen to on the Near FM website on podcast. Is it a subject close to your heart? The series itself was about immigrant poetry. Is it something you feel informs your poetry greatly? I mean, not living in your home country,
I think,
so to speak.
Yeah, it did. But I know because my poetry featured in, two anthologies of migrant poetry. And I was exposed to a number of different poems, and it's really interesting to listen to the voices of immigrants and the stories they have to tell. They're often, well, it depends, obviously, because people move for different reasons, but sometimes some of the stories people have are quite shocking, and I think it's good to listen to them, because, you know, when you read about, let's say, a conflict in the news, for example, you can get a sense of it. But if you read a poem about somebody or written by somebody who was involved or who was in the conflict, it brings it to a different level, I think.
No, absolutely, I understand. Yeah, it's a far more immediate, powerful effect, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about form, obviously you were teaching in UCD at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you're doing a lot of academic writing. But do you write prose? Do you blog? Any other kind of writing apart from your poetry?
I don't blog at the moment, but it's something I'm thinking about starting perhaps. I do write prose sometimes. I wrote a few short stories. One of them was published. But I also wrote a play, a short play about Italians in Ireland, and I'm looking for a director, actually. But my preferred form of writing remains poetry anyway. Mm. I think there is something about it. For me, there is a lot of freedom attached to poetry, and I know some people may disagree, but yeah, I find that's the best way to write for me.
And yet you still try your hand at prose and at drama more recently.
Yeah.
Do you do it as an exercise to perhaps improve your poetry, or is it you do it for its own end, that you want to write prose, you want to write drama?
I want to write prose and drama as well. I think it's important to have both. Obviously, yes, I work as a tutor in UCD, and I write academically, and I also grade essays. But it's quite different from creative writing, I find.
Okay, obviously, Italian is your mother tongue. So, I mean, moving into writing in English, what was that like? I mean, was that... It only first happened when you moved to Ireland for the first time, or were you writing in English in Italy?
No, I think I started writing poems in English when I moved to Ireland. The reason why that happened is, I think, because when I'm in Ireland, I mostly speak English, and I think in English as well. So it's easier to write in English then. But I also write in Italian occasionally, but it's mostly when I go back on holidays. Sometimes I can write in Italian when I'm here as well, but I think I'm not very typical as an Italian, because I don't have many Italian friends. I have a few, but for many years I didn't want to have any Italian friends, just because I wanted to practice my English. It's difficult. I don't want to choose between English and Italian, because they're both beautiful languages, and ideally I'd like to be able to write poetry in both.
And did you have any aids, I suppose, to writing in English when you first came here? I mean,
sometimes I use dictionaries to check words. That's it. I think I think it happened organically. It's only after I began to think in English and speak in English that I wrote in English.
I'm thinking in terms of English-speaking playwrights. I mean, poets.
Yeah.
Were you reading English poetry? I mean, who would you count as your influences, I suppose, in English poetry?
Yes, there are English language poetry or English language poets I like. Mm. I think Yeats is one of my favorite poets. I know his style is a bit difficult, but I'm really inspired by him, not only by his poetry, but also by his subject matter, because I'm really interested in Celtic mythology, and that's what he uses. And I also like the poetry of Coleridge, the English romantic poet.
Yes, Coleridge, of course.
In English. In Italian it's a bit different, because I remember studying poetry in school, and we have great poets, from Dante to Leopardi and so on, but their language is very difficult and far removed from everyday language. So in Italian I would actually prefer a poet like Umberto Saba, who uses much more straightforward and simple language in his poetry, but he still manages to get his message across, and he does so very elegantly, I think.
Your day job, I suppose, is a teacher of ancient folklore and stuff. Your opinions on contemporary poetry and ancient poetry, do you feel contemporary poetry is achieving something? I mean, you spoke there about Umberto Saga.
Saba,
mm-hmm. Excuse me.
No problem.
His language is far more straightforward, far more accessible, I suppose, mm-hmm. for the modern reader. Is that something that you like to try to achieve in your poetry?
I think so, yeah. Because then there is more immediacy, and people can connect more, perhaps. Although, I don't know, because I also like very complicated language sometimes.
What about the poetic scene in Ireland? I mean, is there a nice community? How about open mic nights and stuff? They're really experiencing quite a resurgence of popularity in the last couple of months.
Yes. I think, yeah, I like spoken word events and open mic. There are many of them in Dublin. And I think they are great because, especially for young people, they're more likely to perhaps, well, obviously I'm generalizing and they shouldn't, but many people are more likely to go to an open mic event rather than reading a book of poetry. So it's very good. And because poetry is so much about language and musicality, I think, I like open mic events because I think you get the most out of a poem when it is read or recited or read out loud. I think very good thing. I'm not sure about the slam poetry now. I mean, I enjoy slam poetry as a member of an audience, but I wouldn't take part myself because there is a lot of competition involved and they're very fast-paced. And also, you can't really read your poem. You have to recite it from memory, and I can't do that. But I think lots of young people really like slam poetry. And so it's good because it means that more people are attracted to poetry and go back to it. And
in terms of you spoke there about some poems have to be read out loud, but we'll come back to that in a minute. But I'd like to talk about the idea that you said people are probably, they're more likely to go to an open mic night than sit at home and read a book of poems. Is that connection, that very live connection to the public, is that something important for you?
I think it is. It's becoming more important. Years ago, I just wrote poetry and I was shy. I didn't really read it at all. But when I thought about it, and I think, yeah, it's a good experience, and it's good. I think it's important for both the poet and the public to have that connection. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even if you have a book of poetry, you can read it out loud yourself. But if the poet himself or herself reads it, there is an added dimension because he or she wrote it. So yeah, I tried. I actually only went once to an open mic event in the Irish Writers Centre in March, but it was really good. Everyone was so welcoming and
great organisation. We've had them on the show a few times. Yeah,
they are
excellent supporters of Writer's Block. But again, I have to question you here. Poetry has, you know, it's a reality. Poetry has a very small audience, so it's a niche market. What do you believe is the role of the poet, I suppose, in the 21st century?
That's a question I'm really interested in because I know, having studied folklore, that in the past poets were often seen as the spokespersons for the local communities. They highlighted social injustice, for example, and so on. I think in the last few decades there has been a move away from that. So some poets are just seen as individual artists. Mm-hmm. And actually it's something, it's a question I'm addressing in my own poetry because I'm also interested in social justice, but I don't often write poems about social issues. I like to do it more. So I think perhaps it's about striking a balance between the individual and the collective.
What about writing prose, I mean, about social issues? Could you see yourself doing that as well?
Yeah, you can do that. Actually, one of the short stories I wrote was about a social issue. It was about isolation of older people in particular.
You mentioned briefly that you had been published in a couple of different collections and stuff. What has your experience been with publishing like? Is it difficult? Is there many publishing houses and magazines willing to publish new poetry?
Yeah, it's been like a roller coaster. It really depends. I know there are a number of magazines, but they're often inundated by unsolicited submissions. So I had maybe 5 or 6 poems published, but okay. I sent others and they weren't published. And there is always some subjectivity involved. Obviously, it will depend on the magazine as well. You should know what kind of poetry we like. And also, I had the experience that I had the same poem rejected by a magazine and published by another. So I guess you just have to keep trying. And although, you know, to a certain extent, I know why some people don't want to ever poems published, because in a way you almost bare yourself, you know, you show your vulnerability, and it depends on what you write about, but you know, it's often very personal. And
for sure. Okay, well, I think we might be ready to hear one of Tiziana's poems now, if she would be so kind as to favor us with a poem. So Tiziana, what are you going to read for us?
I'm going to read a poem called Corcaguina.
And can you just introduce that briefly for our listeners, please?
Yes. So it's about the area in County Kerry, and I was there maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I did an Irish language course, and I was struck by the place. And I guess the poem is not just about its place, but it's also about life in general. Corcaguina. Stillness. Here I am, chasing inspiration, like a child trying to catch butterflies which fly too high and quickly, missing them each time. Here it is, entangled, hidden, concealed in the dust which surrounds cobwebs and in the grains of sand stuck to seashells from an ocean that encompasses otherworld islands, seas and seaweed. On the western fringes of the once known world, it is there that I will look for my soul, seeking a deeper meaning, a longer laughter, and the sounds of an ancient tongue. Where life is bitter and sweet, like a rhubarb tart, where the scenery is painstakingly beautiful, but you're not allowed to walk on many paths because they're private properties, or by virtue of the roaring traffic on narrow roads with non-existent footpaths. I'm trying to capture this essence of this land in my poem, but my pen is at a loss, while my mind wanders in circles, like water moved by a pebble cast into it, or a blurred picture taken after having had a few drinks. My task is hard. It is just like trying to make rocks out of sand, or to empty the sea with a sieve. Or again, it is similar to the story of that man who married a mermaid and lived in bliss for some years, but he had to give back his luck, and it often ended in bitter tears. I'm sitting at the table, listening to the sound of the wind among the bushes, the bleating of a sheep, the laugh of a man. As I step outside this borrowed house, I can smell the salty sea air, the fuchsia and all the other wild plants I can never remember the names of, celery and potatoes. When I look around me, I see the hills, the fields, the mountains of a rough, gentle land, which nurtures her children, embracing them like a generous mother. I can taste the fish from the sea, potatoes and carrots and soda bread. If I stretch out my hands, I feel the velvet of the moss and the roughness of the stinging nettles, the hardness of stones and the softness of the grass. Trying to sew all threads together, one thing jumps at me like a dog welcoming its owner. This is a land of contradictions, and perhaps those many sides and shades are the same that you find in the human mind. A universal truth is being unveiled, and the land is my teacher tonight.
Corcaguina by Tiziana Savrino. Beautiful poem, Tiziana. It's always, I say it every time a poet comes in here, it's always lovely to hear a poem in the poet's voice. But a couple of things jump out for me. First, you wrote it while doing an Irish language course?
Yeah.
Excellent. What inspired you to try to learn Irish?
It's because of the studies I'm doing. Many stories in Irish folklore are in Irish, and I also love the language. It's beautiful, so I'm still learning it.
There is, there's a sense that you're chasing something in this poem, at least to me. And then I suppose lines like, it is there that I will look for my soul, and the sounds of an ancient tongue, it's as if there's something kind of essential. Am I right? Is there?
I think so, yeah, because of the place and going to, it's actually, it is an Irish-speaking area even now, and so there was a sense of, you know, going back to the past almost, and looking for myself, and because it's quite different from Dublin, the area is very sparsely populated, and it's beautiful. And I think there is a sense they're almost encouraged to do some soul searching there.
The land is my teacher tonight. I mean, do you see nature as a teacher in all things, or just poetry?
Yeah, I think nature is a great teacher, and sometimes I should probably give up some of the books and learn more from nature.
Wise words, wise words. We'll take another poem, I think, Tiziana. So same again, if you'd please introduce the poem and just tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, so the next poem I'm going to read is called Rain, and it's a short one. So living in Ireland, rain is a frequent occurrence. So I guess I was inspired to write these, but it's not just about the physical rain, but it's also about something that, you know, perhaps you don't like at the beginning, but that you need to grow, just like the rain. So I'm going to read it now. Rain. Here you stand, feeling, touching, experiencing the soft, smooth, slender silk of the rain, intricate as crochet work, deep as the roaring ocean, polluted as our world, with only a slight, pale hope of redemption.
Lovely, lovely. You definitely get a sense of that kind of dichotomy that you were speaking about, something that you don't like, perhaps, but you need it. It's quite funny that you say, you know, as someone from a sunny Mediterranean country, rain, was it something that it took a while to get used to?
Yeah, a little bit. I didn't mind the rain so much, though. I don't like the wind. In my experience, people will complain anyway, because here they complain about the rain, but on the continent they complain because it's too hot, and it is now there are 40 degrees, I know, in France and Italy, so okay. You can't have the perfect weather anywhere.
We'll take another poem, if you would please. Same again. Off you go.
Okay, so this poem is a bit longer now, and it's one of the most recent poems. I think I read it about 3 months ago, and it's called Goji Lychees, or Lychees Avocados. So it's about exotic fruits and food in general, but it's also about the obsession some people have, or I may have, or some members of my family even, about health food and superfoods, and how I think in the last maybe 2 years I got interested in all these exotic food stuff, and I tried some of these not just for the supposed health benefits, but also because it's interesting to try something new. And so I was thinking about that, and I guess that's how the poem came about. Goji, lychees, avocado, spirulina, acai, maca, okra, tulsi, bee pollen, hibiscus, amaranth, red bush, quinoa. Not a simple shopping list. In a frenzy, I stumbled from health food store to gourmet shop and from farmer's market to my cupboard in search of the strangest, most exotic, best health-giving superfood. Proclaimed the panacea to cure all evils, like the opposite of Pandora's box. And yet, I long for them not because of their supposed health benefits. No, what draws me to them is rather the thrill of tasting something new, never tried before, to brush shoulders with strangers, unknown to my taste buds. The first time I tasted okra, I remember, I was transported back to the world of my childhood, when everything was new, sparkling and exciting. With every bite of a new food, I re-entered the realm of discovery, filled up with pure amazement, and discard layers of cynicism, like a snake shedding its own skin, or an onion. But my mom acted slightly puzzled when I enthusiastically told her about tulsi, thinking perhaps my first respiration could soon lead me to experiment with extreme sports or drugs. Now that I think of it, I can already taste the tingle of a parachute jump.
I'd have to say, buying health food, it's not exactly classic thrill-seeker behaviour.
Yeah, maybe it's different, but I don't know. It's It's because many of these foods are exotic, and I'd never heard about them until maybe a couple of years ago. I think there is a similarity, but I know, I appreciate that it can be difficult to see.
But it's the kind of excitement in the everyday. Is that what, I suppose, the poem tries to...
Yeah, it's about, I guess, deep inside, it's about, yeah, trying to recapture that sense of wonder and... You know, when you were a child and everything was new and so wonderful. So, in a way, when you taste a new food, you get a bit of that feeling again.
It's a lovely idea, I suppose, that you can discard layers of cynicism in this kind of cold and clinical adult world. Mm. But I suppose then, where does poetry come into it? Is poetry itself a thrill in the everyday, or does poetry exist to record these thrills?
I think the poetry probably connects the everyday with the spatial and supernatural, and because there is an element of, I don't know, I think, well, I can only talk from experience, but generally when I write a poem, I feel different. I feel everything is possible and spatial. It's like an altered state of consciousness, almost. Even though I don't do drugs. Maybe poetry is about making the everyday exceptional and spatial. I don't know, but obviously down the years, and in many different cultures, there is this idea that poets are somehow connected to the divine or the supernatural and the gods and so on.
And just from reading the few poems that you sent me, there is a kind of recurring strain of poetry as something as supernatural. It's something alien. You often have to access it in a parallel world, I think, is a phrase used in some of your poems. How do you feel about that? Is it kind of a different reality?
I think it is. You can maybe say that all creative endeavors are, in a way, they exist in a parallel world, or, you know, the real, the act of creation itself, if you create a poem or a drawing or whatever, I think it is informed by the supernatural, or, you know, a divine spark or something like that. Presumably anyway, but yeah, it is something I'm interested in, presumably because I studied poets in the ancient world, and
of course
there is an element of that.
Tiziana, I think we're drawing to the close of our interview now. Time always goes so quickly, but you're going to leave us out with one final poem.
So this poem is called I Am, and it's a tribute to Arvorgin from the Book of Invasions. So that's medieval work, and Arvorgin was supposed to be the earliest poet of the Sons of Mir in Ireland. I am. I am a daughter of the 80s. I am an ice cream melting in somebody's pocket. I am a spoiled child, stomping my feet at life's injustices. I am a glacial erratic stuck in the wrong age with no valuable time machine in sight. I am a drop of rain scorched by a burning equatorial sun. I am a flimsy umbrella battered by high winds. I am a victim and a perpetrator. I am a prisoner and a statue of liberty. I am a placid sheep and a cunning tiger. I am the feeling of sand smooth under your feet and the clap of thunder in a storm. I am the tranquility of a summer lake and the violence of a tempestuous sea. I am an anagram of yourself.
And that was Tiziana Soverino, formerly of Italy but now living, working in Ireland. And Tiziana is running a folklore collective event on Friday the 21st of August in the Lantern Centre in Portobello. It's for the Ranelagh, Rathmines and Portobello area. The story is called Share a Story. The project, excuse me, is called Share a Story, Meet Your Neighbours. So if you have a story, a song, a joke, an anecdote or even an old wives' tale, go along and you'll be made feel very welcome. There is refreshments. There's always a carrot, isn't there? Refreshments will be provided. Cakes, tea, coffees, whatever you want. It's supported by SUIS Educational Development and it is part of the Ideas Collective. All are welcome. All races, all nationalities, all professions, everything. So do go along. Sounds like a brilliant event. If you'd like to get some more information, you can get Tiziana on 086-8804-963. That's 086-8804-963. Or you can reach her at email at TizianaSIreland@gmail.com, or simply go onto Facebook and look up Share a Story Project. Well, that's all of it today, folks. Writer's Block will be back on the 14th of August, the usual time of 3:30 on Friday. I've been Morgan O'Reilly. If you'd like to contribute to the show, you can email me at morgan_o'reilly@live.com, or you can get us on Twitter at morgan_o'reilly, and all of the podcasts and info and stuff will all be put up on Twitter. But that's it. Have a great bank holiday weekend. Stay safe on the roads. Good luck and God bless.